Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast. Check the guys out live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, ESPN Radio, Sirius XM, Channel 80, your smart speakers. Morning, guys.
What up, baby?
Jay, you're in Memphis for our spring tour, and it's quite a place to be right now. Ja, you know, after he didn't hit the game winner, you knew he was going to come back with a vengeance. 47 late points when they needed it, the whole thing. And that might not even be the lead this morning.
How you feeling, Jay, man, in Memphis? You have any barbecue?
No, not yet, Key. I got in last night like around 10:15. By the time I got to the hotel, the game was on in the third quarter, so I sat my ass down, watched it to the fourth, passed out, woke up this morning. Now I'm with you, man. But today's going to be the day. We got a lot of things planned today. I'm going to be around the city. I'm here at 92.9 right now, which is really cool. And, damn, what a game last night. What a game. So much to cover, Max.
Unreal, by the way.
I can see the barbecue still on your shirt.
Where's it? Where?
There's right no barbecue on his shirt.
On my shirt, my fit.
It was like a lot came out of that game. Not just Ja's performance, but as I said, the lead probably is the Dylan Brooks flagrant, too. I mean, Jay, this is what Steve Kerr, it's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Listen to how Steve Kerr described it.
I don't know if it was intentional, but it was dirty. And playoff basketball is going to—it's supposed to be physical. You know, everybody's going to compete. Everybody's going to fight for everything. But there's a code in this league. There's a code that players follow, where you never put a guy's season/career in jeopardy. Taking somebody out in midair and clubbing him across the head and ultimately fracturing Gary's elbow. This is a guy who's been toiling the last 6 years trying to make it in this league, finally found a home, just, you know, playing his butt off this year in the playoffs. You know, this should be the time of his life. And a guy comes in and whacks him across the head in midair. He broke the code. Dylan Brooks broke the code. That's how I see it.
You break the code, Jay?
Dylan Brooks should have been ejected in that game, and he should be suspended for another game. That's what the NBA should do in Adam Silver. There's a rule in basketball that when a guy is on a fast break, and if we keep watching the replay over and over, Dylan Brooks barely left the ground, and he winds up. If you're going to foul somebody hard in a fast break, you jump and you meet them at the rim, you let your body connect with them, and you try to beat it up that way. But you don't club them over the head. Gary Payton II extends the ball. He doesn't even seem like he goes for the ball. And it was a reactionary play, but still – clubbing somebody over the head while they're in transition is a bad look. It's a worse foul than the flagrant two that I have for Draymond Green. Now, Draymond Green didn't get suspended for another game, but the NBA needs to do the right thing here and suspend Dylan Brooks for game three, because there's no place in the game of basketball for something like that to happen. Gary Payton Jr. now has, not Jr., excuse me, the second, now has a fractured elbow. And for his story and how he got to the league in the first place, but regardless of whoever it would have been, you don't do something like that, man. You don't.
Well, you don't chase down somebody like you said, Jay. And then most of the time when you see people chase from the backside, they're going to attempt to get the ball off the backboard, attempt to get the block. They're not going to swipe. If they can elevate at the highest level to go get it, we've seen it, whether it was with a Giannis, whether it was with a LeBron James. Mm-hmm. If you can go get the ball off the backboard, yes, you do it. But when you don't leave the ground like you said, Jay, and you go and you wind up and you swipe, and you knock a guy to the ground like that, now he has a fractured elbow. We don't know how he's going to return. We hope that he returns a certain way based on what Coach Kerr just said right there. You've been toying around with different leagues for the past 6 years. You finally found a home, and here you is having a guy do something like that to you. The league should take action to some harsher degree than just a flagrant two. They should make an example out of him for a game or two, in my opinion, because you've now put somebody's career in jeopardy.
Know how I always feel as a fan of a team? Like, if I'm a fan of the Golden State Warriors, I always want the dude with the flagrant to be suspended as long as my guy is out. You know, like, I know it's an unintentional consequence, but you I know. No, you can't do that. He fractured his elbow. You know, you know how you can't really help who you root for? I find myself rooting for Memphis because they're the young, scrappy, right? Like, they're not going to get bullied like in game. They came back, and they're going to be the bullies. But I'll tell you what, it was a dirty play, And as a result of the dirty play, this is precisely why you don't do it. And now a player is out for, like, that's it for his playoffs, yeah, right?
But, Max, this is a retaliation play.
Yep.
Right? This happened in the first 3 minutes of the game. So when you think about what Draymond did to Brandon Clark, grab him by the jersey, what typically happens, Key? Like, we were athletes. We've been in locker rooms. Like, you see something like that. You lose a game like that in game one at home, right? So when you get in the locker room, hey, man, like, they ain't going to come out here and punk us, not on our home court. Mm-hmm. Like, we have to return the favor. I'm not saying doing it deliberately, but we have to be crazy aggressive. I mean, Draymond Green left the game.
You'd be more aggressive, no question about it, Jay. But Draymond's situation is a little bit different because it was a basketball play as far as I was concerned. He actually was playing basketball, and then once he realized that he grabbed the jersey, he didn't try to yank him to the ground. He tried to give him a message, but at the same time hold him mm-hmm. up for yep. not injuring himself to a degree to let him know, yeah, punk, I'm right here. It ain't gonna be easy tonight. On the other side, Brooks was more like out of control, swiping at the head to a point that a guy was knocked to the ground because he couldn't stop his fall. It wasn't nothing Dylan Brooks could do to stop his fall.
The thing that makes it tough about that, though, and I'm not. We can compare the flagrant two fouls all day long, but the thing that when you see it, when a guy jumps and his momentum's taking him towards the basket, when you swipe at his head like that, like his body almost becomes parallel to the ground, and when you see players try to break their fall with their hands, that's what leads to something like that. But he should have never been parallel to the ground in the first place, man. But that was a retaliation play, Max. That's
right,
exactly what that was.
100%. But is that – look, as on the one hand, I'm saying the way I feel as a fan of a team, right? If I'm a Golden State fan, I'm like, I don't want to see the dude who played dirty and that result. I don't want to see him back on the court till my guy's back on the court. I know that's not feasible or realistic, but that's the feeling I get. On the other hand, when the young team – who has that basic sense, Jay, like, we ain't going to get punked, and comes out, and they're the bullies, right? And they had the lead most of the game, and then when it slips late, they come back on them, and they win the game. There is something, like, I'll give you an example. Bud Crawford, Jay, I know you're a fight fan, right? Mm-hmm. Bud Crawford's coming out party, I was calling the fight, and no one had heard of him, really, but everyone knew he could box, like, inside boxing, right? But he's fighting a big puncher, Bradis Prescott, and he was a last-minute replacement. And Bud is boxing the hell out of him, and he keeps hitting Bradis Prescott low on top of it. Then Prescott goes to the ref to complain, and Bud tells him to stop being, is how, like, well, that's short for something, but you get it. So, and he's barking at him. I'm like, hold up, you're beating him up, and you're hitting him low, and you're yelling him to stop complaining to the ref about it? Like, he was comprehensively beating him, including bullying him. I thought, this is a bad little dude. Memphis gave me a little bit of that feeling last night. We're not going to be punked. Dirty play. I'm not condoning it, but and then went on to win the game.
Yeah,
like, and it's tough.
I know we're going to focus on Dylan Brooks and the flagrant too, and whether he should be suspended for another game, which I think he should. But I don't want to take away from the highlight and what the narrative of the game should be. I said yesterday this was a legacy moment for Ja Morant coming up. And I'm telling you guys, last night it was block office. The first player since LeBron James and Kobe Bryant to have multiple 45-point games in the playoffs under the age of 23. What he did last night, putting this team on his back in a must-win scenario, was incredible. That's why he is one of the next greats of this game.
Oh, he was ridiculously block office.
He was block office.
No question about that. Block office, Jay.
He just combined blockbuster and box office.
Yes,
Jordan Poole on skates. Oh, Lord.
Jay, I have no idea what block office is. That must be Duke English or something. But
blockbuster. What? I said block office.
Yeah, you took box office and blockbuster.
You didn't even realize. You didn't even realize you said. You didn't even realize you said block office. I said it again, and you talk about, yeah, he was dealing and willing. I'm like,
he was block
asleep,
office.
But I'm coming in hot.
You get some sleep.
I understand you are working really hard, but get some rest, please.
Block office.
Straight talk wireless, no contract, no compromise. You know who else is block office? That Greek freak. But the Celtics shut him down, even without the defensive player of the year after Jay has this from Masterworks.
Oh, Lord, block office. Telling you guys last night, it was block office. Oh, you guys are going to do that to me?
G-Shawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
So, Louis Domingue. Did I say his name right? Did I say his name right, Evan? The Penguins goaltender?
Yes, Louis Domingue.
Louis Domingue. Look at me.
Louis.
It spells Luis. It Louis Domingue, but Louis Domingue.
No, it's Louis.
It's not, yeah, Louis.
Penguins goaltender Louis. With ESPN's Emily Kaplan. Listen to this. It happened last night, guys. Listen to what he told Emily after the game.
I actually had quite the meal in between the first and the second overtime. I didn't expect going in, but maybe it sustained my energy. So it was cool, though. It was cool to be a part of that.
You say quite the meal. What was it?
You know, some spicy pork and broccoli. Not the best.
Not the best.
I have bubble guts during the game. What's going on?
Wash this that game. Down with a tall glass of milk. Like, what?
So this game went to triple overtime, and Casey DeSmith, the goalie for the Penguins, got hurt. Like, nobody knew how he got hurt. He kind of just they blew the whistle, left the ice in the middle of the second overtime, and Louis Domingue had to be forced into action. But in the intermission before that, he didn't think he was going to play.
I know why.
He went on the spicy pork and broccoli. Like, could you imagine playing a playoff game on that?
No wonder nobody wanted to go around a goal. He was pepper spraying everywhere around the goal.
He was standing on his head.
I wonder if it was shredded pork or pork cubes or what type of pork was it? That was spicy.
I'm going to guess shredded pork with broccoli. Yeah. That's my guess. Yeah.
That sounds. He had some.
But
Chinese
you know what's
food,
so
right? Some shredded.
You know
pork
what's so funny though? That's not uncommon, like in the NFL, to eat something at halftime. That
what?
Yeah, it's
a
not
full
uncommon.
Meal?
A meal?
No, not necessarily a meal.
Yeah,
like
you have a meal.
Power bar.
No, but people. No, but hot dogs and sausages, things of that nature. I've eaten that before at halftime because what happens is. You're starving, and they got in another room where the referees are. They have like little snacks and stuff like that for them. Players eat hot dogs, man. Sausages and stuff like that.
I don't understand this, Key. How are you going to be world-class athlete?
You said
to get a multi-grain power bar or something. You're scarfing down hot dogs?
I'm just telling you, Jay.
With sauerkraut?
You ever have bubble guts in the second half, Key?
Jay,
bubble guts in the second half?
No, you don't even – it's just – You don't even know.
That's
you
right,
don't even
Key. Know this. Remember Mark Sanchez got into – it was a big thing with the Jets when he decided to eat a hot dog on the sideline when they were playing the Raiders. He went over to a fan
absolutely.
And got a hot dog from the fan because he was hungry.
Man, absolutely. Jay, you would be shocked to know what dudes in the locker room – you know the cup of noodle?
Yeah.
Oh, man, they'd be eating a cup of noodles at halftime. Like, what the hell are you doing? Yeah,
Jay. It sounds like NBA a little more health conscious.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know how NFL players get down. Man.
And this is all we'll talk about from the Rangers Penguins game last night. That's all we need to talk about. Just that, nothing else.
All right, guys.
Go Pack.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus. Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
That Jaylen Brown, he was a block office, baby.
Block office.
Key, I'm saying it the rest of the damn show. Block office is my new thing. It's keeping it going.
Better than and Buster Box, guys, I guess.
It was block office.
Right? Better than Buster Box? At least we know what you mean.
Kid, the messed up part, though, you know when you try to emphasize a word and you slow it down to make sure that it really hits? That's what I did. I said, yeah, it was block office.
block
and I'm
office.
Telling you guys, last night, it was block office. There it is. See the pause? What?
Jay, you get the feeling like last night, I know it's a lot of X's and O's and everything and it doesn't work this way. I just felt like, man, neither one of these teams is going to jump up 2-0. These are like both series quality teams. I felt like they were going to knot it up. Get that feeling at all going into the game?
I was a little bit when Dylan Brooks had that flagrant two and he got ejected. I got worried about Memphis. But the way Boston came out in the game against Milwaukee, just the amount of threes that they made, it was off the chart. And Jaylen Brown, we talked about this, guys. The narrative key always following Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, whether you like it or not or think it's fair or unfair, is people are always looking to break these two up. And Jaylen Brown did not show up in game one. He did not. Boy, did he show up in game two. Oh, yeah. I mean, this dude came out. He put Grayson Allen on skates, made him go viral. I mean, was making shots from the outside, and he made a statement, man. And that's what you want to see from your star player.
Everyone can't wait to break him and Tatum up. But meantime, Roz Gold on Wude is with us, guys. ESPN NBA analyst, of course. Roz was on the call for us on Celtics Bucks last night on ESPN Radio. Good morning, Roz.
What's up, Roz?
Good morning, guys. What's up? I'm so excited to talk to y'all. I miss you.
Excited to have you. Jaylen Brown, as we were saying, big game two, struggling game one, but stepped up, answered the bell. What'd you see out of him last night?
Well, first of all, I saw more thoughtfulness and shot selection from the Celtics team overall, and absolutely for Jaylen Brown. I spoke with Ime Udoka before the game, and we were talking about different adjustments. And I also think we need to give flowers to Ime Udoka for all of his adjustments that he pointed out first game. He executed and the team executed it. But for Jaylen, he said, you know, there might be some opportunities for him in the mid-range. Because in game one, they basically took away, they thugged them in the paint. They snuffed out anything in the paint. And then you had the Celtics in game one taking 50 threes, most of them settled for contested jump shots, contested threes or bad threes. And it's not like the threes are bad. They went from taking 50 threes to 43, but it's the type of threes that they hunted this time around. So you want to get them off of ball movement, off of, you know, paint touches, penetrate, kick it out in rhythm or transition, fast break opportunities. And they just were more thoughtful with that. And so he pointed that out as a way to get Jaylen Brown going. And immediately in the start of the game to find rhythm, you found Jaylen wasn't forcing it at the rim. He wasn't settling for the three. Instead, he was probing, finding gaps, and he pulled up and found some mid-range jumpers and points there, and that helped him warm up through the game.
Roz, when you look at Giannis, 11 of 27 from the field, 28 points. I mean, I think game one he had 24 points on 23 shots. What is Boston doing defensively that's making life difficult for Giannis?
Yeah, it's a good question, and it was very different approaches from game one to two. Again, coming back to an adjustment for Celtics coach Ime Udoka, game one, they were doubling frantically on him, sometimes tripling him. And they successfully, like, really disrupted Giannis. In game one, I think it was like 9 for 25 from the field. He hasn't necessarily been scoring efficiently or easily as far as, like, the scoring on the field goal side. He's being met with physicality, great individual defenders, and then also as a unit, everybody collectively being really locked in on him. And then Robert Williams being back healthy and available from the beginning of this series. Remember, he met them in the halfway point of the Nets series because he was coming back from injury. He has been so key, just being disruptive as a final resort around the rim, his length, his athleticism. He's just all over the place, and I think it has been disruptive. But to come back to the difference between game one and two, they doubled Giannis every time, at minimum doubled, and it worked. Giannis was not able to score as efficiently. But in speaking with Ime and also just recognizing what happened, like, you know, they have underestimated how much Giannis has grown as a playmaker, which is crazy because I spoke with Coach Bud before the game and he was like, that's how Giannis has grown the most, as a playmaker. And so, yeah, you took away his shot, but then he also showed he could make reads and the right ones and trust his teammates. So in game one, he was out here with a triple-double finding guys and they were out here hitting threes. Crazy. All the role players stepped up and hit that open shot that Giannis created for them. Game two, complete turnaround. Basically, Ime Udoka decided, I've got capable one-on-one defenders. We're going to go one-on-one against Giannis. And we saw a huge task, Al Horford, keeping Giannis Antetokounmpo in front, meeting him around the rim, and defending him for the most part without fouling. Grant Williams was an incredible X factor for the Celtics. Oh, my God. His versatility and his strength, but also his mobility and speed. He read Giannis like a book a number of times and was able to stay with him one-on-one. And in doing so and handling that task of disrupting Giannis one-on-one in game two, they didn't allow for these open, nice, easy shots for everyone else on the team. And that was a huge adjustment for the Celtics defensively. And Ime Udoka trusted his individual defenders, and they stepped up.
Roz, the Celtics are shooting an alarming clip from three. Is that sustainable in this particular series?
Again, I think it's the right threes, and that's the key. They took 50 game one, they took 43 in game two, but in game two they made 20. and again, the right threes really would be: are you getting good rhythm? Are you making the Celtics defense have to move, rotate, scramble, communicate? Has the ball touched opposite sides of the court? I thought in game one, the Celtics offense looked stagnant a lot. The ball wasn't moving. It was sticky. They resorted back to isolation type basketball plays that they were making at the beginning of the season. And when I found that all of us as a media group, as fans, were talking about how great, is Jason Tatum that guy? Is he top five? Or how great are the Celtics? It was really when we saw Jason Tatum, not only as a scorer, but as a playmaker. And also when we saw the Celtics team really working with one another in rhythm. And in game one, that it was none of that. In game two, they were moving the ball. There was one play, I remember, they had like eight touches before hitting a three. It was textbook. That's got to get on the morning's like highlight reel video. But I think they were much more judicious in game two on it can't be the same read every time. What is the right three-point shot to take? When are we doubling Giannis, if at all? And even for Jaylen Brown, how can I utilize the mid-range shot and not be a slave to trying to force it at great defenders at the rim or settle for the three-point shot, which the Bucks are traditionally going to give you anyway? So I saw a much more intellectual Celtics team in game two.
Yeah, listen, in this day and age, with the three-point era, it feels like so much variance and randomness injected in, but Roz Gold and Wude breaking it down for you. Great stuff, as always, Roz. Great to hear from you.
All right, Roz.
Bye, y'all. Nice to hear from y'all.
Likewise, could one budding young NBA superstar actually be overrated?
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Not hard to tell that Ja was going to have a comeback game after he missed the game winner in game one.
Wait, hey, were you just dropping bars?
I'm not a rapper,
man. Just do right there. Do it again. Go ahead, King.
No, I'm not going to do anything again. I want to ask you a real basketball question. Now, I've been scouting Ja over the last several games, and I've noticed something about him. Everything he's doing is always to the left. Mm. Why is that? Why haven't the Golden State Warriors figured that out yet?
Well, it's like everything, CP3. He always goes
everything,
right.
Literally everything is to the left. Nothing is moved to the right, or the everything is to the left.
I think for some players, they have pace dribbles, Key. Like for me, like all my cradle dribbles, like for my pull-ups or when I would go into the rack, like I just felt like I was more versatile when the ball was in my left hand, almost similar to CP3, right? Like he gets right whenever he wants, and he can go into his pull-up bag, he can go into a step-back, he can get to the rim. But the probability of him going left, he probably goes into a pull-up more so than going all the way to the rim. So, like, for him, that's his pace dribble. That's his most comfortable hand, and you're absolutely right. But when you have Gary Payton II out of the game, that's your primary defensive stopper, a guy that actually can stay disciplined defensively to force him to do that. See that pull-up dribble? Left hand. Ball always comes from the left. Left hand. There it is, off the bounce. That's his pace hand, man.
They should hire me as a defensive specialist, though.
That's a hell of a breakdown right there, boy, though.
By the way, Chris Paul always goes right. It's been going on for 15 years. They haven't figured out how to stop it, right?
Can't stop it, man. How do you stop it?
Yeah, but I'm watching him in a handful of games, man, and notice everything is left, 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 left. Yeah. If it's in the center, it's still to the left.
Finishes
left. Push
to
the left, it's to the left. I ain't seen him pull nothing to the right yet.
Yeah, I just don't. You get your ass in that court, Key, and you see how fast he go. It's hard to stay on that.
Oh, I
man.
See. Yeah,
it's
no,
hard
I
to do
get
it.
It.
You can think it all you want. Then you get out there like, damn.
Man, I didn't already told you. I played basketball. You already know I played hoops or whatever, and we was on some free run with Marbury, and I was like, how did that happen?
Yo, he was there. That's the same kind of speed, though. That's what we're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Man.
Should have one thing to say in theory, right? Sean in Louisiana. You're on with Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, ESPN Radio.
What up, Sean?
Keyshawn, J. Will, Max, man. Big fan. Big
what's
fan.
What's up, Wody?
Respect, baby.
What's up?
So I got a question, man. I know y'all loving Ja Morant, but do y'all really think he's as good as everybody's saying he is right now, especially with the inconsistency he's been showing us in this playoff series?
Man, it sounds to me, Sean, like you calling him overrated. And if that's the case, what? I'm calling him underrated. Sean, I'm calling him underrated. This dude got the MIP this year. You know that, right? Most improved player, which is such a slap in the face. My man was in the MVP conversation before he got hurt. Before everybody started saying, well, they're 22-1 without him, and they started using that against him. So for me, look, when Zion Williamson came out of school, we made Zion Williamson, the media, social media, into the LeBron James of college basketball. He was everywhere. We made Trae Young into the baby Stephen Curry of college basketball. He was everywhere. What do we make Ja Morant into? Nothing. He was an unknown entity. So if there's anything, I feel like if you buy Ja Morant stock right now, you're still buying it comparatively low to what it's going to be in years to come.
And I thought he was
I don't think he's overrated at all. I think what it is, though, is you're seeing something that just looks a certain way, and so it's in the playoffs. He's doing it in the playoffs, and when there's only a handful of games being played, there's a lot of eyeballs on that, and he's consistently doing his thing, and it just looked different for a guy of that stature that is out there dropping 40-some points on people's heads. You sit there and you look at it skying through the air to the point where Klay Thompson, a defender, decided to get out of the way because he didn't want to be put on a poster. So when you start looking at that, you're like, he's not overrated. I think he's headed in the right direction. You know, Trae Young, on the other hand, last year he beats the Knicks. He takes care of business at one of the teams in the biggest city, the biggest city in the country, and then we explode that. And then because they didn't do great this year in Atlanta, we kind of pushing him down a little bit. I think Ja is in a similar situation, only I think Ja is here really to be sustained on a long-term situation, especially if he figure out how to clip up the Golden State Warriors.
I thought Ja was going to be a superstar out of college.
See,
and
I
could tell he's already exceeded my expectations. I did not know he would be this good, this fast. And I'll tell you something else about Sean, Jay. Boy, I admire it. My people call it chutzpah, right? Like, on the day after this dude dropped 47 in a playoff win over the Warriors, you call up and say, you know what? I think he's overrated. Ooh, I admire it. What a day to say that.
But you know what, though, Max?
You saw him in college like that, Jay?
Yeah, well,
there was going to be a star?
I thought it
was superstar. But, Key, you know what, though? Like, here's the thing. Like, we talk about block office. I'm going to keep saying it all day long because I think it just works. Like, but it was my job. I got paid to watch college ball all day, every day. Right? So
you're still being paid.
Yeah, well, I know, but I'm just saying, though, like, specifically on college ball. So when you see it, you're like, yo, that looks different. And plus, him and Zion Williamson played on the same damn AAU team in high school. Can you imagine that? Oh, my God. The same team, but it didn't get the same kind of snack, crackle, and pop, like you call it, Key, in college. But outside of Kyrie Irving, man, he might have the best handle off the dribble getting to the rack.
His handles is crazy.
He made Jordan Poole spin like as if he was on skates.
Almost broke
last night.
Dude kneecaps open.
Ooh,
so he's got the handles combined with a good enough shot already, and it'll probably get better, combined with the killer instinct, combined with the crazy hops, right? Like, he's got a whole lot.
But the crazy thing is, Max, like, we're talking about Ja, right? It's almost like the same thing we talk about with Trey. Like, hey, okay, these guys are block office, but, like, who's going to be that next guy with them, right? Like, Luka, right? Block office. But, like, are we trying to put Zach LaVine with Dallas, like, to give him a 1-2 pop? Desmond Bain hasn't been that great. Like, in these playoffs, he's been hampered with the injury. Jaren Jackson played well the first game, but it feels like they're missing a number two
guy. We'll see.
You
know, by the way, don't let him steal one at Golden State. Don't let him steal one at Golden State.
When I saw him in Murray State, though, Jay, you know, because of the handles and the speed and the quickness and acceleration to the cup, you know what I thought that was, though?
What?
I thought that was like some Skip to Malou type stuff.
Ooh, yo. Mm-hmm.
When I saw it, I'm like.
Got a little of that in.
It ain't going to transfer the way you need it to. But obviously, you know. What the hell do I know, right? I mean,
no,
I'm looking
come on,
at it.
You on that, Rafer? You on that? There you skip to my
you know,
tip.
I just
you
thought,
know what else it feels like
I
too,
just
down
thought
here
it would
quick?
Just look different.
You know how, like, in L.A., there's Hollywood, then there's Black Hollywood? It feels like there's Black Hollywood down here in Memphis, man. Like, Gucci, man, everybody's sitting courtside. It feels different down here. Yo, it's popping.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, presented by Progressive Insurance. The NBA playoffs are on ESPN Radio. Tune in tonight. Suns host the Mavs, presented by Indeed. Coverage begins at 9:30 p.m. Eastern on most ESPN radio stations. All right, let's get to another story in the great state of Tennessee.
You know, I have no problem with Malik, and we're competing against each other. We're, you know, watching the same tape. We're doing the same drills. I don't think it's my job to mentor him.
It ain't his job to mentor Malik Willis. You know what it would be, though? It would be nice. It would be nice for him to mentor him. It would be nice to be in the quarterback room and bounce things off of him as opposed to him just watching what you're doing. Because watching what you're doing, last time we saw you out, ain't going to keep him a job at a quarterback either.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, ESPN Radio, Sirius XM Channel 80. What's up, Key?
No, I'm reacting to that pick he just threw.
Well, he threw a bunch of them in the playoffs, and they drafted a quarterback in Malik Willis in the 11,000th round. Adam Schefter, ESPN NFL insiders on the 6 p.m. Sports Center, and reported this.
Tennessee dipped its toes into the Aaron Rodgers waters. It dipped its toes into the Deshaun Watson waters. And when it couldn't get a deal done, it turned back to Ryan Tannehill, but still drafted Malik Willis in the third round when he was still available. So now it gives them time to bring him along slowly while still having the benefit of Ryan Tannehill's play and hoping that he plays more like he did a couple of years ago in the postseason than he did last year. And if he does, then everything will work out fine for him. And if not, they will have the advantage of having Malik Willis in their system for one full year to try to get him ready and up to speed.
Look, I don't know if Ryan Tannehill got comfortable in the situation. He certainly led them to the playoffs despite Derrick Henry missing a lot of time a year ago. You do want him to play like he did a couple years ago when they went on an AFC magical run to the AFC championship game and eventually lost to the Kansas City Chiefs. But flirting with other quarterbacks like a Tom Brady prior to him signing his extension, or seeing what Aaron Rodgers thought about after purchasing some land in the Tennessee area, or looking to sniff out Deshaun Watson after he was cleared of the things that he has been accused of doing. I understand that. Those quarterbacks are significantly better. Malik Willis being drafted in the third round is not better than Ryan Tannehill right now today. Malik Willis is a project for the Tennessee Titans. But at the same time, Ryan Tannehill has to put up or shut up, because one of the things that they will do is they will make a decision on what that quarterback market looks like next year, and Ryan Tannehill could be on the move if he doesn't get back to where he was a couple years ago.
By the way, Key, let's just be specific about it. It's not that Deshaun Watson was cleared of it. There were no charges to be cleared of criminally, because no criminal charges were even brought. However, there are a lot of open civil cases still out there against him. Jay, it seems to me that if a quarterback who you think is good but not great fails in the playoffs and kind of fails spectacularly, whatever details you want to go into is why this pick was thrown or that pick was thrown, you know, there were a bunch of picks at inopportune times. And that team starts – we get kicking the tires on Aaron Rodgers and those guys, but then also drafts a quarterback. It does leave the impression that they think we want more.
Well, my thing is, Ryan Tannehill, do your job, man. Respond. If Key, I'm back to your point. Like, moves are made in professional industries where people get brought in who have potential better resumes, right? Or the ceiling, due to the way that you play, it has a chance to be a little bit higher. And if Malik Willis has a third-round pick, has a chance to be that, you know who can stop him from being that? Ryan Tannehill. I have no problem at all with a guy getting competitive about his job that has been on the line multiple times. And by the way, you haven't answered the call. So, you know what? If you don't answer the call, there's somebody here that potentially can. Now it's time to put up or shut up.
And there is somebody here who potentially can put up, not shut up. Dan Graziano, ladies and gentlemen, giving you the Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. Dan, what do you make of the Tannehill? Adam Schefter reports, like, kind of, it's a standard issue stuff, right? I'm not here to mentor him, but if he learns from me, says Ryan Tannehill of Malik Willis, that's great. What do you make of the quarterback situation in Tennessee right now?
Well, look, I mean, they have Tannehill there. They're committed to him, certainly, at least through this year. And then they have Willis, who they draft as a young player who they think very highly of his talent. And maybe down the road, he's the guy that ends up replacing Tannehill. I think that's pretty clear to everyone. Ryan Tannehill showed up a little salty for his news conference, right? Like, I mean, he was talking about how he was in a dark place after the playoff loss and all this stuff. So, like, his frame of mind was already kind of, you know, defensive, right? Like, he knew he was going to be answering tough questions. I don't understand what's so hard about the starting quarterback of the team saying, yeah, you know, he's my teammate, and whatever he needs from me, he'll get, just like every other one of my teammates. I want everybody to succeed. I don't understand what's wrong with that. And I was a little surprised because Tannehill's not a guy that you usually hear anything particularly interesting from, right? Like, he kind of walks the line and says the right thing. So it was surprising to me that he wouldn't hit the right note on that, but I don't think that he did.
Dan, I hear what you're saying about being a good teammate, but also, like, that as an athlete and as a competitor, sometimes when you feel like there's a lot of things that have been looming around about Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady and now a draft pick, mm-hmm. like it can probably rub you the wrong way, but can't you say that this may be what Ryan Tannehill actually needs to actually drive himself to be the best quarterback he can be for this team?
I think what Ryan Tannehill needs to be the best quarterback he can be is A.J. Brown, and he's probably a little bit salty about that going down too the week before, right? So yeah. I think Tannehill's had a great run in Tennessee, and there's no reason for him to fear for his job security. Even if Malik Willis had been a first-round pick, the narrative on him going into the draft was that he wouldn't be ready right away, that he would need some time, and that whoever drafted him would not be planning to start him in 2022. So, I don't know why he would feel threatened. I guess to your point, Jay, I understand what you're saying about being a competitive athlete. I do think there's something a little different, and this is my outsider's perspective, about being an NFL quarterback. I think that's a little bit of a different role. Yes, you can be the competitive athlete. Yes, things can rub you the wrong way, but I do think you have to sort of be, because you're so front-facing and so representative of the organization as a whole, there are probably times when you have to kind of swallow that and look at your latest direct deposit slip for the reason why.
Dan, you know, you mentioned that Ryan, you can't understand why players, quarterbacks in particular, just won't embrace another guy being drafted in the room. I think all quarterbacks feel that way. Ryan Tannehill is the first one to come out and say it. If you remember, the most famous one of all was Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers. Yep. Brett Favre said that. Ben Roethlisberger said it. I think when you, from a mental standpoint, when someone is drafted in your position, you feel a certain way about the organization because you start to feel like the organization doesn't trust you, but they gave you the keys to drive the car, even though that car is not getting you to the ultimate destination, and they look to flirt with somebody else. Malik Willis is a good prospect. We've seen a number of third-round, fourth-round picks. You know, New England Patriots took a quarterback this year in the fourth round. Does that mean that Mac Jones' job is in jeopardy? No. That just means that they need the depth at that position. Malik Willis will not be ready, Dan, for at least 2 years to even take a snap at a competitive level in this league.
So that's why I wonder what would be the harm in sort of saying the right thing if you're Ryan Tannehill and communicating to the young player on your team that, hey, you know, you're welcome here.
Dan,
right?
I think you gave important context.
Because I don't need him being comfortable.
Yeah, I think.
What do you mean? I don't want to be comfortable.
Play at some point.
I don't need him being comfortable. I don't need him thinking he's getting ready to take my job or allowing the coaches to think that his heart is bigger than mine. So I'm going to try to crush him as quick as possible.
Tell him, Keith. Tell him.
But I think Dan gave good context, guys. Let's look at the whole picture. You're Tannehill. You're a reclamation project to start with, but you're a success story. Oh, my God, and you look at the numbers and da-da-da. Actually, maybe is he good enough? You mess up in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. They're kicking the tires on Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, Deshaun Watson, whoever the top quarterbacks. But that's okay because everyone kicks the tires on the best quarterbacks ever, right? Then they trade your best receiver. Mm-hmm. Then they draft another quarterback, right? There's a lot of adding up there, Dan.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that's still simmering when he sits down in front of the microphone yesterday. And I think, I think we got a real look at what he's thinking. I don't think there's any doubt about that. It just feels like
it makes the guys like him more. Like he and Jay like what they're hearing out of him.
Yeah, I guess. Great. I guess I just wonder, like, what's the
Great.
What's the benefit, right, to the Tennessee Titans of handling it that way? I guess would be my question. And certainly, the Tennessee Titans have been good to him.
Ryan Tannehill can play football.
Mm-hmm.
He just, you know, he had some unlucky bounces in the Cincinnati game. I think he has some ability to get you to a Super Bowl if everything is right. He's very athletic. Hell, he played receiver at Texas A&M before moving back to quarterback and being selected by the Miami Dolphins. So we know he has athletic ability. I just think that sometimes a guy like this can only, Dan, as you know, been covering this league for a long time, can only take you so far and need a couple other pieces around him to get him over the top. That's why they tried to get Julio Jones last year. Mm-hmm. That's why they drafted A.J. Brown. That's why those sort of players can help him get over the top. It just didn't happen. So now they're searching for another way to push him to get over the top.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. I wonder if they're still kicking tires and where those tires are being kicked. Thank you, Dan Graziano. LeBron, is he done in L.A.? That's next. What? Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, ESPN Radio.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast.